Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXOradio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. Actually, let me repeat that. It's 760-337-8874.
The pain, the trauma. The person who thought that up doesn't live here. That I can assure you. Hey, let's add four more numbers to the phone number.
I know.
Oh, gosh. Great idea. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see if in 2 or 3 years we're still, like, mentally complaining about it. Like, we still haven't gotten used to it.
Well, I it's too soon right now. I dial a number that's been in my memory brain for a long time, and it's saying, you know, that I dialed it wrong or it needs a zero, and then I do it again, and finally until the third attempt, like, oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
I know.
And you know, I think it's for people that have speed dial, who have computers dialing their phones for them, because I think 10 digits is more than your brain wants to carry around in its pocket. 7 was, I think, probably based on good neurological science, and 10's like too many. But here we are, 1-760-337-8874, and this is Let's Talk About Your Voice for Wellness, and our guest today is Florentino Olivas, and he's a master's. Are you licensed to do it yet?
Not yet.
I saw you practicing outside on the streets yesterday, driving up and down. And
oh, yeah. Driver's license, I already got it. Thank you, though. No, but my colleagues are, well, one of my colleagues is Helen McLean.
Yeah, you guys are starting to break through now.
Right, that's right. And Lillian Vera already took her first part and passed it. Congratulations to her.
All right.
And so it looks like we're all kind of going like dust in a row.
So when are you going to take your test?
Hopefully sometime this November, if not early December. So
good. Is it regularly scheduled or?
Well, you have to get a scheduled date. You have to get a scheduled date, but I really want to get real prepared before I jump into any kind of testing. It's been a while since I had those kinds of testings. So it's not like a daily occurrence.
Nice.
So you test, and it's a two-part test, or you can
It's a two-part test. One is, I believe, a multiple choice, and then the other one is also multiple choice, but more of a clinical aspect of it. So, like I said, Helen did a great job, passed it, and now she's home free. So it's now time for us to do the same thing.
Well, you know, one of the things that's neat, because this is kind of a fruition of a vision, by the way, because we've always had this under clinical expertise issue here in the Valley, because, you know, people get their license, they go to La Jolla, they get a nice office, they do private practice, whatever, but there's always been kind of a paucity of licensed clinicians, and so you guys are really the end of a vision that really brought the masters of social work down to San Diego State in Calexico, and you know, a lot of local people hooked that up to make it go. And so now we have this whole generation of young, talented, dare I say, good-looking clinicians coming through the system, and it's going to be interesting to see what the impact is on the community, because it would be pretty easy to say that this is a good thing for us. You know, it's a good thing to have a group of experts that are in the community mental health system. Oh, wait, you're going to private practice?
Oh, man. No. well, you know what, it is a good thing.
It's an option that he might have.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it always
everybody.
Is. Right, and then, but also you have another generation that is just coming through. Also, they just started another master's program down at San Diego State, and that's also very exciting, because now I'm at the other spectrum where I'm the field instructor, where not too long ago I was a field student.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite an experience as well, but I think...
program for MS?
Yeah, MSW is coming through, and one of the things is, you keep the people locally who are pretty much born and raised locally, so they understand the dynamics of all the different communities here, you know, starting from as far north as Salton Sea, Bombay Beach, and then working our way all the way down to Calexico, you know, Winter Haven, and Ocotillo.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Welcome aboard, and thanks for being a part of that.
All right, thanks.
You got other gigs going on, though, too, huh? Are you doing the Sunshine thing still?
Yes, I'm doing the Sunshine Counseling.
With Mr. Jim Shen?
Yes, he's quite a interesting person and a very nice man, very nice man. And he's just...
He's awesome, okay?
It's been a great experience. I was his field student, and now I'm his partner, so how weird is that?
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it is real cool.
And you guys, are you guys still doing the free Saturday show things to talk about stuff?
Yeah, we try to do as many free things for the community. We understand community needs, and we also understand, you know, there's not a lot of finances. So we try to do as many free things as possible. And some, it's just sometimes we're just kind of hit with a time constraint. So,
nice. That's kind of a cool gig, too. And then you're also the Mr. Pop Warner guru thing, whatever that is.
Pop Warner is winding down. Just to let everybody know, regionals, we're hosting first round of regionals this Saturday at Central Union High School. And a lot of our local teams are going up against some of the teams up there from the San Diego area. And we're looking forward to, you know, making it real competitive and moving on to the next level.
How's that been for you? I mean, this is your first year as Pop Warner Administrator, and I noticed the gray hairs. Is that coincidence?
No, well, gray hairs usually come with it, with anything, but I think it's been quite an experience. I have a great board, a great staff, and they work real hard. And even though a lot of situations have come up, they've been able to handle it in stride. Not a problem.
Nice.
So you're the person to contact if they want a child to get into Pop Warner. What is the
call my staff.
Yeah, well, the number is available, 760-562-7173. But we're done with Pop Warner this season.
For next year.
Next year. Yeah, we're looking at February, March to start up.
Around the corner.
Right, right around the corner.
Yeah. And start doing push-ups, kids.
Wow. Get ready.
Make weight. You guys have to make weight and stuff, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Work.
Stop eating.
Girls?
Yes. Okay. We also have cheer squads. And
not cheer squads. Girls playing.
Yeah, they can play.
Okay.
They can play.
So all the girls out there, those fathers and mothers that have girls.
Show the boys a few tricks or what?
No. What are you talking about? No, they can be
run them
there.
Over. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I heard you say that. That's what Haley's going to do, huh?
Haley's going to be racing cars.
Ooh, like when she's not running through linemen and stuff. I can see that. Girl's tough. I can see that. All right, 1-760-337-8874 is the phone number. Let's talk about it as the show. And one of the reasons we kind of stopped in the beginning here and do this is because, you know, it's really important to kind of see that you know, these are the people in your neighborhood. It's really, we're fortunate to have community members that are experts that are willing to come in and talk about the stuff that they work with every day and stuff that may be very useful in terms of helping you in the community manage your lives or manage your children's lives, as the case may be. And so today's topic is Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, better known by the dreaded acronym ADHD.
Yes.
Which we'll probably say 150 times. So if you hear an acronym on the show and you call us up and say, hey, you guys said an acronym and I'm not sure what that is, call us up and embarrass us because we're an acronymless training.
But you know what? I think that acronym... I think
get the free pass
it's, no, yes, it's been around for a while, and everybody knows it. Actually, they know it better by the acronym than by the formal name.
I think that's almost safe, but that being said, we'll watch the acronym.
Okay, we will.
All right. Morning, Flo. How are you?
Good morning.
Good.
Good morning.
So, you guys ready?
Yes,
yeah.
We are.
All right.
Okay.
Well, why don't we start off with the criteria for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder.
Better known as ADHD.
Right. And then we'll bring it up to speed through the DSM-4, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, that we use here, the fourth version that we use to kind of diagnose some of the behaviors and put them into the categories to start to treat them. Kind of like a doctor kind of sees a cold. He needs to know, is it the cold? Is it the flu? Is it, you know, what is it?
So that's an important point to start on, right? I mean, it's like I can't just walk out in the parking lot and look at a kid that's running around and say, oh, ADHD.
Right, because there could be a lot of different factors.
So you need to legally be able to diagnose stuff, and then you don't just look at a kid and decide. You go through some pretty rigorous assessment stuff.
Right, because one of the things is that sometimes people start to kind of self-diagnose, or they see a child, and, yeah, he may be a little bit active, you know, for his age, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's hyperactive or meets the criteria for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. We need to make sure that, you know, we don't get... Internet is great, and I've said this before, but sometimes if we look at the Internet and we just say, yeah, they meet this, You know, and then we start thinking this is what they have, and it could be completely off base. So, you know, we would want to leave it up to professionals. Trust me, if my hand hurts and I hit it with a hammer, I'm not going to try to tell myself that I have a broken hand unless I go to the doctor, get an x-ray, and they tell me you have a broken hand. So that's kind of pretty much the same thing. You want to take it to somebody who knows and understands this.
So making assumptions may actually make whatever's going on worse.
Right. Like you maybe start treating a symptom, or you may start treating a behavior that may not necessarily be what you think it is.
Running around name calling. Stop being so hyper.
Yeah. Right. And we got to, you know, as a community, we got to really watch that, because we see a lot of kids all over the place, and right away we want to kind of say, that's ADHD, or that's, you know,
you see them at parties, or do you see them at McDonald's?
Right.
Big days. Or you see them at, you know, running around the park or anywhere, and oh my God, you know, that kid has ADHD. But that's incorrect. You shouldn't be doing that.
Exactly. Exactly, because you know what? You don't know what that person is. So, you know, just leave it up to the professionals. Next, by the way, just common courtesy, you don't want to be labeling kids, or you don't want to be kind of telling other people, I think your kid has this. You know, unless you're a close family member and you've noticed his behavior for quite some time, you may just say, hey, you know what, why don't you take him to go get tested, or be seen by a professional and see what maybe, you know, maybe he has something else. And I think we talked about it right before the show, of all these different things that he may have.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want to just start and just talk a little bit about the criteria, and then we can kind of move into the rest of the...
You just go ahead and do that. We'll jump in. Don't worry.
All right. Here we go. So with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, there are three kind of types. But I want to talk about some of the characteristics of it. Two main criteria is, number one is the inattention piece. It has to be, there has to be at least six or more of these symptoms in the last 6 months. That would be...
Get your pencils out.
Here we go. Fails to give close attention to details or is careless. Okay. Trouble keeping focus or lacks attention. Fails to follow instruction or finish tasks. Trouble organizing activities. Avoids, dislikes tasks that require sustained mental effort. Easily distracted. Forgetful of daily activities. Okay. Now,
how many of those do we need?
We need about at least six of those. Let's see. In the last 6 months.
Okay.
Well.
Right. And
that could be any kid.
Right. I mean, that could be any adult. You know, depending on the task that they give you at work. You could wind up, you know.
My toddler.
You know, you could catch yourself being, you know, failing to lack attention or being careless about certain things. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. These are kind of some behaviors that people go through anyway. But you just want to make sure that it's not a consistent flow of these behaviors on a daily basis.
Or causing all sorts of problems.
Right. Right. The second piece is the hyperactivity piece. And that's to either fidget with your hands or feet, squirm in your seat when you're trying to be seated, or get up from the seat when they need to be sitting down, okay, say like a church or an event where you kind of need to be sitting down. Runs about, climbs, or when and where not appropriate. Okay, like you're at the park, hey, you want to climb, jump around all you want. You're at church, you may not want to jump around and climb unless you're outside at the, you know, Sunday
school. Well, that's where they have like the little kids' church, so like the three-year-olds, because three-year-olds developmentally can't.
Right, and it's good for their development to be doing that.
Right.
Feels restless. When you're an adolescent or an adult, you feel restless all the time. You got to be doing something. Often on the go, kind of like driven by a motor. Talk excessively. Blurts out answers before the questions are finished. Trouble taking your turn or taking their turn. Interrupts, intrudes on others, such as conversations or games, kind of just like jumps in like, oh, I want to play now, you know, and doesn't really understand the concept of kind of, and some of these behaviors are normal, but you want to kind of like look at, is this repetitive behavior? Is this always happening? Is this a consistent thing? Mm-hmm. You know, is this really impairing the way he kind of socializes with other kids, his school, his work, you know, whatever the case may be. If we look at, you know, some of these symptoms have to be present before the age of 7. And like, again, the impairment of these symptoms has to be at least in two of these settings, either school,
you work. You can't catch ADHD, like when you're 9.
No, you can't. Yeah, there's a misconception that, you know, somehow if you hang out with somebody, yeah, you do feed off the person's energy, I believe. But you can't be, you know, you just can't pick up ADHD. It's not like somebody's going to sneeze on you.
It's not a virus.
Yeah, and you're ADHD. Okay. There's clear evidence that there has to be clear evidence that the significant impairment in one of these settings, the school, the social, or the work functioning. Okay, in other words, now, we've seen kids where sometimes the parent comes in and says, I know my kid's ADHD because he's this way, this way, this way, this way at home.
But at school.
Right, and we say, well, what about at school? Well, at school, he's a perfect student. Straight A, sits in his seats. The teacher tells me he's a model student. You know, we got to look at other factors there because that, you know, usually with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, you
can't
look
turn
at,
it on and off.
It's, right. It's all the time.
Right. It's all the time, you know, 24/7. And it's not something like, well, I can be, you know, I can be well at school for 6 hours, six and a half, but at home I'm just completely different.
What about something like a video game? Because video games are really crazy and the action's changing all the time and it's moving around and stuff like that. Can is some kids settle down in front of really engrossing types of games like that?
Well, there's a lot of studies on video games. And, it, you know, you could go back and forth with how does video games kind of either help manifest some of these behaviors, but also with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, it pretty much has to be something that is already happening beforehand.
I mean, it's almost like you've taken the distraction and made it part of the environment.
Right. And there's studies going on right now regarding environmental factors, but there's nothing real conclusive saying, you know what, the environment is really the proponent of attention.
Right, right. No, I'm not suggesting causality. I guess what I'm saying is if I've got a kid who's bouncing around at school or having some of these symptoms at school, and they're also having them at home, and then they lock into, I don't know, name a video game. I don't play them. Worlds of Wonderfulness or something.
I have no idea. Call
of Duty,
I don't play.
Modern Warfare or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden they're locked in. You know, and all of a sudden they're like 3 hours later, and you know they've got drool coming out of the corner of their mouth, and they're still trying.
How
to
about this? They're
you know,
playing some
weird level to the next level. Do I need to get the kid assessed? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Well, you can get the kid assessed for any particular reason. If the parent feels, you know what, there's a concern with the behavior, yes, you can bring them in, just like you know you would take them to the doctor. You know, I think it may be the sniffles. But you know what? If the parent's concerned, the doctor will still see them and say, "Okay, well, let's take a look at what's going on." And then after that, you know, you can kind of pinpoint. Well, you know what? It's just how long is he spending in front of the video game? 3 hours. Okay, that may be a cause of.
Well, no, and I was actually going the opposite way. The video game's like the one place where it appears functional, in a weird way. You know, because school's not functional, home's not functional. Yet you plug some of these children in front
of. Has there been? Well, do you know of any study?
Highly stimulating electronic devices. And that seems to kind of soothe the savage beast, as it were. So we
so
still want to get those kids checked out, though.
Right, right.
So you're saying that that's worked? Because there's research on it? That
well, no,
you know,
it's not working because what you've done is you've externalized the hyperactivity and attention span stuff. So it's yeah, it works, but it, you know you don't get a very successful life sitting in front of a video game, do you?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you something, Scott. I was looking at some research talking about environment and evolutionary. And the research was stating that, you know, back in the good old days. Yes. Back in early, you know, pioneering days, hyperactivity was something positive because, you know, the hyperactive person would go out, hunt,
yeah.
Find the food,
yeah.
Make the shelter, but they were not gonna just
go out and gather up those cattle.
Right. Go get the food, go build a shelter. Yeah, that would work. And it did work. But you know what? They weren't the ones that, okay, now stay and tend to the farm.
Yeah, no.
Like,
no,
I can't do that. Now I got to go do, you know. And I don't remember the actual research, but I did look at it, and it was very interesting to me that hyperactivity does serve a purpose.
They were the laborers.
They were the ones that...
They were not the administrators or the managers.
That we would say, now we would say, they're the go-getters.
Yeah.
You know, you need something done, you give them the task because they're the go-getters. And you know what?
So when you do the school play, then some kids are going to be trees and some kids are going to be the wind. This kid would be the wind.
Right. Okay. Right. It serves a purpose. Yeah. You're going to be the wind. You're going to be the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And this young man over here is going to be the rock. He's just going to stay right there, not move.
So if you can find areas where attention deficit types of behaviors are strengts, you can get kids to feel pretty good about themselves.
But the thing is, the way it is, school right now, you have to sit in your desk and you have to pay attention. And you shouldn't be disrupting the class because there's the teacher's trying to teach and there's other kids that are trying to pay attention. And then if you have this child that is active and bouncing off the walls, then
needs to be out gathering cattle.
Then, yeah, it's a little bit distraction for the other kids. I would be definitely distracted, you know, listen to the teacher or watch the other kid, you know, dance around the class.
Right. And there are settings like school, church, or like a gathering where the person needs to be kind of still and paying attention. But there are techniques where you can actually reward some of these kids for that behavior and then help them to kind of change that behavior, to kind of start to manage that behavior on their own. And case in point, yesterday we had that training. And I think that was a wonderful training that we had. And I think we were all there, yes?
And not we're, all of us, the people listening.
Yeah. Okay, well,
the
three of us that are here. And one of the things that I liked about the trainers is that they understood that there comes a time where people need to kind of be a little active. So they would give, you know, the 5-minute, the 10-minute break about every hour, which is excellent because, you know what, you cannot sustain mental effort on such hard subjects for such a long period of time and expect to kind of recall that fast. But by giving the little breaks, it kind of helps you kind of like work out some of those kinks and then get right back in. You know, so I think
and it's true. We've been in trainings where, you know,
you got 4 hours, of lecture.
Like, and in a 15-minute break in those 4 hours or a 10-minute break. And you're like...
Right, guys, 5 PowerPoint with a whole slide, like, full up of words.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
And one of the things is that you want to make sure that you're kind of like rewarding that behavior. You want to make sure that you understand, okay, my child has been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, but, you know, that doesn't mean that he cannot continue on with his life. I just need to kind of, as a parent, I need to do some work. And you know what? And it is work. With people who have had their kids diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, right away what I tell them is it's going to be work. But it's going to be rewarding work because this is your child and you're going to help them. And you know what? Some of the parents, they love it and they jump right into it because you can make this function and these kids can have a very sustainable, very productive life. It's just a lot of effort.
So it doesn't work? Just give them the medicine and you're done?
Well, that would be...
medicine in here? Okay.
Well, you know what? Medication does work. And there is a lot of research saying that, you know, the stimulants that are prescribed by the psychiatrist or the medical profession, it does work and it does help. But you also want to teach parents, you know, there are some tasks, you know, apart from just giving them the medication, there are some tasks you can do to help them. Because one of the things that is real concerning for parents is that they say, I don't want them to get hooked on the medication. Or I don't want them to start because I'm afraid they may continue and be dependent on that medication. So you start telling them,
truth or fallacy.
Right. And so one of the things you want to tell them is, okay, well, then you're going to have to do some work also. Because if you're just going to give them the medication, yes, it's going to work. But what are you really teaching?
Do kids get hooked on attention deficit medication? I mean, in your experience, Florence, you know, working with the youth of the Imperial Valley, when children taking medication for attention deficit disorder turn, say, 12, 13, 14, typically do they want to keep taking their medication? Or do you sometimes have to fight with them to get them to actually what we call be medication compliant?
Okay, well, you know what? I got a statistic
here. If kids were getting hooked on it, wouldn't a 14-year-old want to take more or like double? Yay, sure, Mom, I'll take my pill. Can I have another one, please?
You know, with the medication, I looked at the research on there, and it says 80% of the children who have been diagnosed do need medication. Okay, 80%.
Right.
But from that point on, 50%, 80% still need the medication when they turn into teens from the 100% population.
Mm-hmm.
80% still need it. But then there is adult attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. 50% of those adults...
Mm-hmm.
also need the medication.
Right, but
that
for teens, it's like a classic battle to try and get them to take their medication, right?
Right.
Because they don't think they need it.
Right.
Well, geez, if it were addictive and they were getting hooked on it,
it counteracts with them. I mean, they don't get hyper.
One of the things
if they sell it to somebody that doesn't have ADHD,
when you see the change in percentages, one of the things there's a lot of variables there. One of the things could be that, you know, the kids just stop taking care, stop taking it. The other one is there's physiological changes going on during their teen years. So that may have some some factors in there.
Could it be that some of them just don't need it anymore? They grow out of it, or that saying that
those,
you know,
lucky few, the 20%.
That 20%.
You know, and like I said, the research right now is not saying people grow out of ADHD. It's just
they learn how to manage it.
Right. They learn how to manage it. And one of the things is that I have a friend, and I know he has ADHD because he's told me he has attention deficit.
No, hyperactivity. You know what? When people start telling me stories like this, it's always they're really talking about themselves. And they say, well, like, I've got this friend, and
actually, I do have this friend, but I don't want to use his name because I didn't
it's
have
not really you, though. I guess it's...
Okay. I may have it at some level, but...
No, I don't think so. No, you're
so one of the things is that he's learned how to manage it. And he did take medication for some time, but he's learned how to manage that behavior, and he understands how to kind of move it, how to use it when he needs to be really productive, and how to kind of manage it when he knows he needs to be in a board meeting or he needs to be in a meeting that is going to require some attention. But he kind of has to learn. He learned how to kind of use up that energy and kind of focus it. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's impossible for people. It's just sometimes difficult. But he had great parents that really supported his diagnosis, and they really supported that he was going to be able to manage it because they wanted him off the medication and they wanted him to make sure that he had all the support. Now, at one point, his parents did say, if he still needs the medication, he's going to be an adult. Mm-hmm. He makes that decision. But at this point, we want to try to help him to manage his behavior as best as possible.
337-760-337-8874 is the phone number. You're listening to KUVO Radio Bilingual. Radio Bilingue.
Yeah, that's cool.
Serving the Imperial and Mexicali Valleys with more of your mental health talk. What do you call it? Weekly Wellness
Weekly
Radio.
Weekly Wellness Radio.
This is Let's Talk About It. We're here with Florentino Olivas, who is a master of social work, leaning into that licensed clinical thing. Been working for Imperial County Behavioral Health now for five-ish, six-ish.
Mm.
Getting there.
5 years.
Yeah. Formerly really helpful person over at DS. One of our allies over at Department of Social Services. And we loved him over there. We love him over here. Always doing good stuff for the community.
But going back, as a parent, for, you know, you said it's a really good idea. I mean, the best thing is to get a professional to give that diagnosis. And the reasons are because there could be other, it might not be attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Nice.
I was going to say the acronym.
Right. One of the things is that you can look at the child's behavior and you may think, well, this is what he has. And here are some of the factors that it could be. It could be either a recent change in the family, whether it be a death or a divorce, a parent job loss, or just a sudden change. You know, in this community, the housing market got hit. And it really kind of moved some people from one location in the valley to a different location. And some of it had to do with the finances.
With emotional pain and other things kind of flying around.
Right, exactly. And so then you see this drastic change from one neighborhood, you uproot to another neighborhood, and you kind of have to make connections and everything else. There may be some adjustment there. You know, especially during your teen years, there may be some real huge adjustment.
School.
You're going from one school now to a different school. And because of this, or you may move in back in with, you know, your relatives to kind of make ends meet. And that's difficult. But you know what? There's a lot of adjustments. So, yeah, some of the teachers may say, you know what? And teachers are great about asking, what has been the change? Or when they see a new student, where are they coming from? Because they need to understand, okay, they were this kind of student over at this school, but now here they're having a hard time because they're, you know, midstream or whatever. They're trying to adjust to all the new things that school has to offer, that new neighborhood has to offer, the new living situation, you know, living back with grandma, grandpa, uncles, aunts, cousins, you know, whoever it may be. So that's one scenario.
And these kids are acting out.
Right.
They're acting
right.
out with all that.
So you got to rule out big changes then.
Big changes. Big changes have to be kind of ruled out. Another one would be medical conditions. We talked about it in the beginning. We talked about how, you know, there's hypothyroidism, anemia, lead poisoning, a chronic illness, a hearing or vision impairment, sometimes substance abuse, okay, or medication side effects. You know, somebody has allergies and they're taking a new medication, it's changing their behavior. I know with my own kids, when I give them certain cough medicines, their hyperactivity goes up.
Oh, yeah.
So I need to make sure that, you know, even though the medication says it's going to make him feel drowsy, it makes them feel
hyperactive. Benadryl.
Asthma medication sometimes.
Asthma. Yeah, my son has asthma. And some of that medication, you know, it has that effect, and you just have to be real cautious that, okay, there's a new medication. There's behavior, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why we talked about, you know, these symptoms have to be kind of present before the age of 7. Now, a lot of parents, they don't look at their kids before the age of 7. They just kind of think, well, they're going to grow out of it. Right.
Yeah.
They're going to grow out of it. And some do. But then you have to kind of look back and say, okay, now they're having some difficulty here. And it's really kind of impeding their education. Mm-hmm. You know, it's stopping them from being the full potential of a student or the full potential as a person. And they're going to start, you know, when they're teens, they're going to start telling their parents, you know what? I just can't do it. You know, the material is just getting much more difficult. And we've all gone through school, so we understand, hey, you know what? The big transition from elementary to junior high.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, talk about a lot of changes. And then, boom, you go up to high school. You know, that material does change. It goes from one classroom to 6 classrooms. And then from 6 classrooms to 6 different materials in those 6 classrooms.
So if you had attentional problems and hadn't begun to manage them yet, it would be exacerbated because now
worse.
You're in a fairly chaotic
right.
environment.
Right.
With hormones.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot of different kinds of changes going on. Plus, there's also the environmental changes and, you know, the socialization and everything else that goes along with that.
So the key thing is to diagnose it early. How early can you diagnose a child? How old can they be? Or when is it too soon? Or is it too soon?
Anyway? Start around 7:15 in the morning, right? Because that's the earliest.
No, the age-wise. That time-wise.
Age-wise, I would say, you know what, when you start noticing the behavior and, you know, I've seen kids as young as 3. I haven't seen any 2-year-olds, but I have seen kids as young
as 3. Really? 3 years old?
As young as 3 come in. And then we look at that because we also want to make sure that we're not going to give this person a diagnosis when it may just be, you know, but when we do the assessment, we look at all the different factors. We look at the family functioning. We look at the school functioning. How are they doing in the community? You know, how are they doing with their own self-care? Those are the 4 big components that we look at because we want to make sure that, you know, if everything else is fine, but with dad or with mom, they act a certain way, then we need to see what are the dynamics there. Or if everything else is fine and at school they're just having a tough time, then we need to see, okay, well, what's going on in the school environment? Okay, and then going back, you know, we look at it again. School's fine, home's fine, but in the community, wow, they're just really having a lot of problems. What's going on in the community? Did they just move into the community? I think we talked about this also is with this unique community that we have here, language, you know, that is a major deal because sometimes kids will come in and the parents will talk to me and say, you know what, he's just not doing very well in school.
But they say it in Spanish though, right?
Right.
No.
Mm-hmm. They say it in Spanish and they say, you know, he's just not doing well in school. But in Mexicali, he was, you know, perfect student. And I talk to the young man or young lady, and then they say, you know what, I just don't understand. So I get bored in the class because I don't know what's going on. And, you know, there is a
frustrating
change.
For a good student, too. That would be really frustrating.
Right, right, because you feel kind of like you're helpless at that situation. And you kind of need to say, you know what, parent, this is a piece where you go back into the school system and let them know. You know, how can my student be straight A, come to this school and be, you know, kind of failing some of these courses? And, you know, look at the language. Mm-hmm. How well does he have a mastery of the language? And what are they teaching him? And what language are they teaching him? Because you'll see a big difference when they kind of modify the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll see a big change in the student. Now, if they modify the school and they start teaching them in that different language.
A more supportive fashion.
Right. More nurturing, more supportive. And then you see a big change or you see no change. Then you kind of get a handle like, okay, they change your schooling. And you're still having these behaviors and these problems. So that's how one of the ways that we try to educate the parents. Understand, this is not just you're going to come in, get the medication, and you're good. It's you're going to come in, get medication, be monitored, okay, get some psychoeducation, get some treatment, and also, you know, not only will the child be getting the behavior modification, but also the parent will be taught a lot of how to, you know.
Structure.
How to maintain the structure and the safety and the security for these kids because sometimes they may feel that their world is kind of out of control and they're the ones that are supposed to keep it under control and they're having a hard time with that.
Now, there's a genetic link. I mean, parents and children with attention deficits seem to run in suits.
Right. And one of the things, the major research is being done in genetics. And there is high correlation about, you know, it is kind of a genetic situation that has kind of gone from one generation to another.
So now you get a parent with attention deficit trying to manage
a child with attention deficit. Well, the problem, it gets worse if the parent's attention was never addressed or diagnosed.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's my point, is that the best form of treatment, from what I'm hearing close, is this kind of full court press.
Structure, you know, monitoring,
if needed, structure, monitoring, mm-hmm. coaching, a lot of supportive things. And it may be difficult for parents who haven't been able to conceive of that in their own lives to go ahead and pop this into place for their kids.
Right, because it's true. You know, before it wasn't diagnosed as often, right? And some people, they say, well, I worked through it. He can also work through it, or they can also work through it. But, you know, you want to kind of give your child an advantage. And I think every parent in the world wants to give their kid some sort of advantage. And you know what? If you did work through it,
suffering is not an advantage.
Well, it could be a learning experience.
When you're doing push-ups, it could be a learning. Exactly. When you're doing push-ups, it's good.
Suffering is a learning experience, I think. But one of the things is that you worked through it. How did you do it? And can you teach this to your son or daughter? You know, can you help them?
So what else
do we know and is available today? Because, you know, just because you boiled water on burning sticks doesn't mean we can't use a microwave today, right?
Right. Right. What are some of the techniques that are out there that will help? What are some of the techniques that, you know, have produced the results? You know, and that's all the things that you want to kind of educate the parents and give them, you know, the best. What I try to do is I try to give them as much information and then let them kind of pick what they can and they can't do. And then we take it from there.
And then bounce back and see how it works.
Right.
What if they can't, because they themselves, like you said, they have also been undiagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
with attention, or it could be that they have other issues. You know, they have the family's going through some stressors right now, or they're just, you know, they have this child, they brought him here to behavioral health, and, you know, they want us to fix them, or, you know, give them the medication, and, you know, because they themselves can do it, because they're having their own issues.
Well, one of the things is that by bringing them here, we will link them or help them to link to other resources out in the community, maybe a support group. You know, it can get exhausting.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. That, you know, it's
and
just
you know,
sometimes parents mean well, but it's just maybe then themselves just can't.
Right. You and parents, I'm not trying to harp on you guys, and I'm not trying to say it's parents. But you know what? You guys are the best role models for the kids. And one of the things is, yes, it does get exhausting, but you know what? If you are coming to behavioral health and they are getting therapy, you know, talk to the therapist also. You know, we try to give them
maybe content. They can also get help themselves.
Exactly. And you know, and you want to talk to the therapist and say, okay, all these things are working, but I feel so exhausted. And then we do some relaxation. We do some things that maybe they can do. Take a break. They can take a time out. You know, support groups are awesome. That's one of the things that we're working really hard. Privately to try to do, you know, Sunshine Week. And one of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying to get some support groups out there that are kind of meaningful and that kind of will help the community, because this is a small community. It's getting a little bit bigger, and we need to make sure that we're taking care of our own, so that way people don't have to drive an hour and a half either way, whether it's Yuma or San Diego.
Yeah, it's too expensive.
Right. And what you want to do is we want to get these support groups, and for the most part, they're real convenient. And they're real kind of, you know, minimal financing.
Hey, that might be an okay use of the internet, though, huh?
You know, if you want to look at the internet and maybe find some things there that will or may or may not work.
Support group. I mean, the theory of a support group, you could do that in that modality.
I would like, but still, you know, it's better the contact, the human contact.
I think the human contact, internet
not
is great.
The same.
Yeah. One of the things is that the human contact really says a lot. And for me, if you know, I could do an interview over the phone, and that's not a problem.
He actually is doing an interview over the phone. We don't have him in sight today.
Right. But one of the things is that you have to kind of be able to see all the behaviors, see everything. Because when somebody tells you, you know what, I'm fine, they're looking down on the floor, and they look exhausted, you want to kind of acknowledge mm-hmm. that and say, you know, you're telling me you're fine, but, you know, from what I see, you look exhausted because you're looking down mm-hmm. and all this and all that. You know, and then sometimes people just need a chance to kind of share, this is how I'm feeling. And it's okay. It's okay to feel frustrated. You know, sometimes, you know, I've heard this. Sometimes you know, my child just kind of pushes my buttons and just gets me to that point. And it's like, yep, yep, kids will have a tendency to do that. You know, all kids have a tendency to do that.
Yeah.
So it's not just your own, you know, kind of normalize that and say, you know what, it's not just your child. Children in general have a tendency to do that. Teenagers in general have a tendency to do that. Sometimes adults.
Developmentally appropriate. That's my favorite thing to say.
There you go. But you know what? It's how we deal with that. Where do we go? And how do we kind of help each other out? You know, I've talked to parents and I've talked to children and with the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And one of the things is that just when both of them kind of connect, the child understands their support and the parent knows the child understands they're there for them. That it really kind of starts to build some fruit right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a big difference in the way the family dynamics start to change. So not only do you educate the parent, but the parent starts to educate the people around them, mm-hmm. the relatives, mm-hmm. you know, so they don't call them, you know, there goes, you know, he's so hyper, or here's, he's so, no, don't, yeah. don't, you know, don't
you're
do that.
You're not helping.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Don't do that. What you want to do is, okay, you see them that way, hey, you want to go outside? Hey, you know, maybe you don't want to be here watching TV. You want to go and do this? You know, something where they use their motor activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to play with the Play-Doh, you want to do this, you want to go outside, you want to run around, whatever it is. Instead of just saying, oh, you know, just sit down, don't be so hyper.
Labeling.
Right. Right. Oh, he's got ADD, oh, you got ADHD. You don't want to do that. You want to kind of be supportive. They already know something's going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to kind of tell them, oh, this is this, because they start getting something negative out of that.
Well, you want a confident child who believes in themselves, who's always going to try their best. And, you know, one of the ways to get that is to not, like, shoot them down or cut them down or, you know,
right.
point out their obvious glaring weaknesses. Because,
right.
You know,
you brought up the point about this.
Football coach.
You want to bring up the point about the structure. Structure really helps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what time do they go to bed? You know, let me look at the rest of the precautions, okay? And it does talk about, not only does it talk about the medical, but it also talks about problems with learning disability. You know, we talked about the language. We talked about there's actually learning disability,
mm-hmm.
you know, dyslexia, and other learning disabilities, you know, mathematics. Also, it may have anxiety or depression over a certain situation. Insufficient sleep patterns. Okay, sleep's very important for kids.
And these are the ones that might not have,
right.
or they might mimic, or they might think that the parent
right.
might think that, okay.
Right, it just might came about that, you know, some of this behavior, oh, they're exhibiting some of this behavior, but you know what, look at all this. Also, you know, the big one, child abuse. You know, maybe a teacher out there will say, you know what, I've noticed that this kid's just ADHD and blah, 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 and whatever the case may be. Okay, I know there's no teachers out there like that, but a teacher somewhere in the world may say that. And one of the things is that you got to make sure that, you know what, this is a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
What else is going on? You know, have you noticed anything else? And child abuse, you know, like for my previous occupation, it happens everywhere. And, you know, some serious stuff happens even here locally. So you might want to kind of take a look at that. If this child never exhibited any of this behavior, you look at their school records and everything was fine, and all of a sudden this is going on, what's the change? Going back to what has been the change. And you know what? Basically, in the past few years, with everything that's gone on in the world, has been a great, huge change. You know, and that's one of the things that you want to kind of look at. Do they have anxiety? Some of these kids, they keep talking about the H1N1, you know, the swine flu. So one of the things...
We did a really good job of turning that into... crisis, didn't we?
Well, you know, one of the things is that when we start talking about that, and yes, that's a concern, but kids don't understand, and they think...
Try to explain the movie 2012 to an 8-year-old. My goodness.
And one of the things is that you look at that...
I don't even know about it, so don't even...
One of the things is that you look at that, and you cause some anxiety there. And yeah, they were a perfect student, but now they're kind of, you know, somebody sees it in the class, and what's going on in their head? Oh, my goodness, does somebody have swine flu in this classroom? Am I going to get it? You know, don't let them watch that movie Outbreak. Remember that movie Outbreak?
Hey, there you go.
That's another one that, you know, it starts to propel a different kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, like I said, you want to really look at what were the behaviors before the age of 7 and what are the behaviors that are kind of manifesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to talk about the three slight pieces here of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And, you know, you're going to look at, there is the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, primarily hyperactive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that means that, you know, they're always on the go. you know, most of the hyperactivity disorder, I mean, hyperactivity symptoms that we talked about are the ones they have. There's the other one that's primarily inattentive. Okay, that means spacey. Yeah, just kind of like looking around, not really focusing on what they need to focus. And then there's the one that's combination. They're both hyperactive and inattentive. So a lot of people, they used to call the inattentive type the ADD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now they just kind of group them together and giving them three different kind of subsections.
So there's a combination between attentive and inattentive.
And hyperactive.
And hyperactive.
Right. So you want to take a look at all three of those. And like I said, just getting back to the parents and the education piece, it's, you know what, parents, just do what you can, as much as you can.
Do we do parent coaching? I mean, is that one of the things that our rehab techs do when they're working with ADHD children and their families to support this kind of management strategy for attention?
Right. Our rehabilitation technicians do primarily the work of going to the home and helping to educate and teach parents and relatives about what are the situations.
Like using structure for your advantage.
Right. How to set limits, how to set reward mm-hmm. systems, how to, when they're feeling a certain way, how to kind of help them manage that.
Accentuate strengths.
Right. How to help children, and this is a big thing, how to help your child get things done. They can still have this and still get things done.
Well, is anybody not managing their attention? Don't we all have to do that?
I think, you know, that's something that we always
try.
Have to do.
Universal
need. Right.
Right.
And it doesn't stop at school. It keeps going on
yeah,
and on.
At work, everywhere.
Right. At radio shows, how does it maintain attention?
What were we talking? Sorry.
No, but the key thing is getting the parents involved. I mean, it's really important, you know, for parents. It's not just, what I'm trying to say, it's not just giving them the magic pill and everything is going to work out.
Untreated
great.
ADHD leads to lots of negative stuff, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can go into
substance abuse, mm-hmm. you know, to criminal.
There could be, you know, you could get oppositional defiant disorders, which goes into a whole different section, and some other things that can manifest is, you know, obsessive compulsive anxiety disorders. All these different things can manifest from this because a child has not learned how to kind of cope with a situation and that has not learned how to manage these things.
Well, and walking around with poor impulse control when you grow up, that's not a good thing because you break laws and try drugs you shouldn't try and.
Right. So
if he hit people you're mad at, and you know.
So just one of the things for the parents to understand is that there are resources out there. The main resource, you know, where we all work, Imperial County Behavioral Health, and that's area code 760-482-4000. Or you can also call the 1-800 number. It's 1-800-817-5292.
When did you get those tattoos?
No, I actually put them here on my slides. But also there are a lot of private therapists and a lot of private psychiatrists, your medical doctor, okay, anybody in the medical profession who can point you in the right direction.
But the key is
taking them.
If
you know,
you see, especially the parents, you know, or the teachers, if they, like you said, if the student has been a good student, you know, no problems, and all of a sudden they're failing class.
Or they've been since the first day of kindergarten in the penalty box. You know, or
right.
some other type of
exactly.
punitive measure.
Yeah.
Right.
It's time to do something about it, you know.
Yeah, if you have to discipline your child so many times where you're looking at a pattern, then you kind of might want to take a look at, well, you know what?
Or you never discipline them, but you're really annoyed at them.
Right. Passive parenting. So that's a whole other thing. But like I said, just the resources out there in the community that will help them completely.
Yeah, absolutely. Flo, thanks for coming aboard today.
Hey, no problem.
That's mm-hmm. been fun again, and we welcome you back anytime you come. You know what? But come next time with license. We want the license thing.
Okay? Wow, right. Put pressure on him.
Right.
Like that.
Bust out the LCSW thing
okay.
on the show here. Have a little celebration.
I'll be back in 5 years then.
No.
No, I'll be back, and hopefully there'll be some movement.
All right. Good to hear. Thanks for all you do to the community.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
Good luck with the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUVO 88.7 FM, Claudia Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.